It's my pleasure to have on someone who I've not met. Patrick Wall, you're on the air, are you?
Hey, Rick, thanks for having me.
No, my pleasure. I never expected to see another book about this horrifying crime. My friend Maury Posley some years ago wrote a good book, The Brown's Chicken Massacre. And so across my desk is a new book by Patrick called Something Big, The True Story of the Brown's Chicken Massacre, a decade-long manhunt, and the trials that followed. It's a very compelling story. And at the beginning of it, in a preface, Patrick writes, truer words have never been written, Patrick, than America has a fixation with true crime. And you talk about the 1993 massacre that made national headlines, and I think it sort of, as you rightly say, sort of traumatized certainly the people in Palatine and the people in Chicago. And you write that you certainly were interested as you got older, as someone who was raised not far from where it occurred and grew up eating fried chicken from the chain for which the crime is eponymously referred, it always struck me, but the story was distant. Patrick, you're an attorney and author?
I am, that's correct. Yes.
What compelled you to investigate this crime?
Well, as you mentioned from the preface there, it's a story I'm obviously familiar with, being from Chicago, growing up in the northwest suburbs, not too far from this, where all this took place in Palatine. And in digging around, I was kind of struck at how, obviously you mentioned Maury Posley's book,
sure,
which was written before the, just after the two killers were caught. I was surprised that nothing really had been done since then. And but there's something almost every month on this case. In the last 10, 15 years or so, there's been a really uptick of interest in true crime stories.
No kidding.
Yeah. You see it on, Netflix and Hulu and podcasts in particular.
True crime, Patrick, has kind of become the fuel for the podcast world. I mean, I can't go a day without reading about some other true crime podcast. You had written a book, a previous book you have written, correct?
Yes, and so my past book was about a legendary race in the northwest suburbs. It was a campaign between Penny Pullen and Rosemary Mulligan.
In the
Park Ridge and Des Plaines area, and that got a bunch of national attention in 1990. And so the really only connection between those two books for me was that these were two stories that had really always stuck with me. But to your question, it struck me that in everything that's done, all the podcasts that are produced about this, they're often kind of done with just in a rote manner, just repeating facts, and often done with people who get things wrong or have no connection to Chicago. And most importantly, they leave out the stories of the people involved. And so that's what I tried to do with this book, was focus on the individuals, the more human aspect. And so each chapter in the book is focused on a different individual who was involved in one way.
Indeed, because the hard to focus on the poor people who died in that horrific crime. Was it difficult to get some of these people to talk to you?
It certainly was more challenging than writing about a political campaign.
Yeah, no kidding.
And I talk about this in the book, about how I sort of, when you start writing a book, you start far out. You don't just call up the police who worked on this immediately, or family members of the victims. You talk to people who are kind of on the periphery, and there's no question this sticks with people each day, anyone who was touched by it. And so I really tried to be very sensitive about that. I never I tried to get a hold of people, and I was fortunate that no one actually said no, who I was able to get in contact with. Now, yeah, there were some families, unfortunately, who, you know, the people who could talk about their loved ones were passed, or and that sort of thing, or some of the police, the chief, for example, in Palatine is passed. So you sort of fill in the gaps with things like the trial transcripts, which
is
what I had access to from the trials, and are very intimate, too, I think, filled with details that I think people don't necessarily know about today, even if they do know the case.
See, Patrick, well, why don't you, because I do, I'm not going to do it because it's your book. It's, again, it's settled something big, the true story of the Brown's Chicken Massacre, a decade-long manhunt, which was fascinating, and the trials that followed. Can you give the listeners, and there are many people, even those who were around at the time, who have, you know, not memory fading, but sort of vague idea about, oh, yeah, I remember that. It was really, they'll tell you it was really terrible. If you could detail it for us, and in so doing, I think you will remind people of how absolutely horrifying it was. Would you mind?
Sure, sure. I'll give kind of the 10,000-foot overview of of the case. So this all took place in Palatine, Illinois. Just for those who aren't familiar, a suburb, medium-sized suburb, northwest of O'Hare. And this is 1993. It's kind of quintessential suburbia. And on January 8th, which was a Friday of 1993, it was kind of a cold night, snowy night. And the two owners and five employees at a Brown's Chicken franchise, which is still around but was certainly much bigger then, were closing up and doing their routine, you know, cleaning down the fryers, wiping down the tables. And just past close after 9 o'clock, two men showed up and they ordered, one of them went to the counter, ordered a four-piece chicken dinner meal. They sat down, had a few bites, one of them did, and then proceeded to kill everyone in the restaurant and put their bodies in the coolers and the freezers of the restaurant. It was a horrible scene. And the case went unsolved for nearly a decade until 2002, when the two men were arrested. And the crux of the case and the reason people know it and why there's such a fascination with it is because it was broken by a girlfriend who came forward, one of the ex-girlfriends of one of the killers. And the way that they were able to connect the killers to the scene of the crime was on the chicken bones of that four-piece chicken dinner meal that they found at the scene of the crime.
Yep. Because DNA testing had become more sophisticated, correct, in the 10 years, and by some, I don't know if it was a fluke or why do you think they kept those bones?
Well, it was a very prescient crime scene technician who made the decision to freeze it. Police had located it, though, even before she decided to freeze it, because the garbage cans at the scene were clean because they had been closing up, and so the police assumed right away that there was some significance there. But as you mentioned, in 93, there wasn't much that could be done with a saliva sample that small.
So right.
They kept it, and for a while it was actually in the freezer at the Palatine police station. But obviously, they were able to extract a sample, get a profile in 1998, but they didn't have a match because if you can't match it against someone else who's already in some, you know, criminal database, and there was no Ancestry.com or anything like that in 98, they had to wait until they found someone. And so it was ultimately the girlfriend who came forward and broke the case.
I always thought that was among the most fascinating aspects of this thing. And You do a remarkably good job in Something Big. I did not think, I thought to myself, I like Maury's book a lot, and I thought, well, what else is there to say? You have really uncovered great stories, and not happy stories, but great stories. If you can hold on, I'll take a little break and come back, and we can talk more about it. I also want to talk about your feelings about how that crime kind of as I always said, it kind of shattered the last innocent thoughts of suburbia. Something Big, the true story of the Brahms Chicken Massacre, a decade-long manhunt, and the trials that followed, is a fabulous book by Patrick Wall, who is an attorney and a writer. And it is focused on people. In it, he writes near the end that the families of the people who were had family members slain waited 15 years for answers, but the memory of their loved ones would never fade. There'd forever be signs around, like a sound or a smell that reminded them of what they'd lost to a senseless act of violence. Each new life event marked an occasion a parent had missed. Children grew older, finally surpassing the age at which their mother or father had lived. You're a pretty good writer, Patrick Wall, especially for an attorney, and I mean that as a great compliment. You wrote one book before. I mean, is writing is not for you, I would imagine, a mere pastime, is it, or hobby?
Well, I would certainly say it's more than a hobby at this point, but I certainly haven't quit my day job or anything like that. But you know, as you've probably talked to a lot of the authors who you interview, you certainly have to be very invested in the stories you are interested in, and I've always found a good way for that, for me at least, is to write about things where I'm from, which has made it fascinating for me.
Sure. Do you still live in the area?
I'm actually in Washington, D.C., so I grew up in the northwest suburbs, but live in Washington now.
Are you a practicing attorney?
I am, yes. I work at a firm here in Washington and do corporate law and all that kind of stuff. So it's completely different from writing and not at all connected to this story, certainly.
Certainly. No, not. So I'm assuming what has been, I'm assuming the reception of this book, you know, it's so sad these days because there used to be so many places that reviewed books, and I'm sure that's a frustration for me whenever I write a book. What has been generally, if you can sense, the reception beyond me liking and admiring your book?
which I appreciate, of course. Well, we've certainly got a lot of attention in Chicago, you know, the TV and radio and I will say now, though, the main source of the main place where people discover their books is really social media. So
yeah.
It's Instagram and TikTok, and people who have read it, especially whether they have a connection or not. And that was one of my goals, is to give something new for people who are familiar with the story, as well as make it interesting for people who don't have a connection. It's been overwhelmingly positive, which has been great.
That's great. Do you find that many or some or a few of the people you interviewed, and you interviewed everybody from cops to, of course, the family members of those who were slaughtered, a word I would use, are haunted by those events?
I don't think something like this ever fades. I certainly can't speak to everyone's thoughts on that, but it is interesting in interviewing people who are close to this, just how different people deal with grief. And when I spoke to people in the case, and in particular family members, I really just tried to focus on the stories of their loved one, because they've talked about this case before. There's interviews in the past, and I use all of that about, you know, their experience with the case. And so I tried to focus on that human element, sort of portraying them as people and less as victims.
Well, I think I'm not assuming to know what you thought going into this whole thing, but I have the feeling that you wanted to do justice to these people, the people who were killed, because in a sense they wind up, as time passes, of being less human beings than just dead bodies. Was that?
Well, and I think there's some things that people sort of misremember about the case, or things that sort of linger over it too, that I really wanted to focus on in the book. One of them is that if you go up to someone in Chicago and you ask them about this case, often the first thing they'll tell you is that it was botched. They completely missed the mark, the police. And from my perspective, and looking into this 30 years later, that's not true. I mean, there were certainly mistakes. There's mistakes in any investigation.
Sure.
But they brought in all of the right people from, you know, some of Chicago's most experienced homicide detectives, from FBI agents and profilers. And ultimately, this is a case that was only going to be solved in the way that it was, and that is someone coming forward. So that's sort of a myth that I wanted to dispel.
I hope you. I can't think of any cases in memory that might suit your talents, but I certainly hope you have another book in you, and I hope you are inspired. You're a fine writer too, aside from your research and interviewing abilities. You must be justifiably proud of this book.
It's been amazing hearing from so many people who have a connection. I mean, I've been getting notes every week from people who are from Palatine, or knew people associated with the case, or followed it very closely and are learning things that they didn't know. And so I certainly appreciate hearing from people, and that's been an incredible experience.
Can I ask you, this is such, Patrick, well, this is such a weird time in the publishing business, in the publishing industry. Was it difficult to find a publisher for this book, and did you present it as a completed manuscript, or were you able to get an advance, or how did it work? Because I think a lot of publishers, idiotic as they can be, will say, "Well, that's 30 years ago. What's the big deal? Who's going to buy this book?" Was it difficult for you?
You definitely had to kind of explain it to people.
Yeah, I'll bet.
And especially because a lot of editors are in New York, and one of them actually said to me, "Oh, I love stories about places out there where people haven't heard of." And
God,
I had to explain to her, "This is not the middle of nowhere."
Yes.
it was a challenge. I was fortunate that because I'd written a book before.
Right.
When you're pitching, or your agent is pitching to publishers, we just had a proposal.
Right, good.
That we used with a couple sample chapters. But I certainly had interviewed people before and knew kind of the direction I was going to take it in, because, you sort of have to have proof of concept and know that you can tell a full story. Yes, it certainly is difficult today in our ecosystem.
Ridiculous. It is ridiculous. Post Hill Press did a very fine job. It's a very compelling cover. You write in the book, "I promise to write this book in a way that is different from other tales, respecting the families, while still managing to tell a compelling narrative for readers with no connection to Palatine, Illinois. Ultimately, the people impacted by this case, the families, the past suspects, police, and attorneys, will be the ones to judge whether I kept that promise. I hope they feel that I was true to my word and that this book does their story justice." I'm not one of those people who may have been the audience, but I think you did them justice, Patrick Wall. Next time you're in town, call me, and I'd love to meet you and talk more about books and writing with you. The book is called Something Big, The True Story of the Brown's Chicken Massacre, A Decade-Long Manhunt, and the trials that followed. The author is Patrick Wall, W-O-H-L. Do you still have family in this neck of the woods?
I do. I'm sort of the black sheep. Everyone is in Chicago, north side or northwest suburbs, except for myself. So take the guy out of Chicago, but you can't take Chicago out of the guy. So
what do they hate? Lawyers? You're the black sheep of the family as an attorney?
Yeah.
I will, when I meet you, I will ask what the rest of your family does. Patrick, congratulations and thank you very much.
Thank you for having me, Rick. I appreciate it.
You bet. Take care.